This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
What?
Be the man! You gotta beat the man!
What?
It's just some man!
Ooh, yeah!
And I have half the brain to keep it.
Is Top Turnbuckle.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. You are back inside the Top Turnbuckle studios. It's time once more. That's right. It's time for edition of Morrison and Mickey Review Raw. That's Chris Morrison.
Yes, this is me.
And I'm Kevin Mickey. So great of you to join us today. So great. Hey, Chris, do you like wrestling?
I love wrestling, Kevin. Do you like wrestling?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. You want to chat about it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Hey, did you watch wrestling last night being Monday for Monday Night Raw?
I did watch it last night. Did you watch it last night?
I watched some of it last night and then some of it right before I came in.
Perfect.
It was our work Christmas party, so I had to catch up on Raw.
Tell everybody out there in the wrestling podcast world how hungover you are right now.
I had a good time last night. We'll say that. Yeah, Rogers put on a hell of a Christmas party over at Kelly's Landing in Toronto. It was a good time. There's a lot of people there, way more than I was expecting. There's at least 100 people there.
Yeah, shout out to Kelly's Landing.
Yeah. What up, Kelly's Landing? Yeah. I had brunch at you once. It was great. Okay. Some things happened. Some stuff happened. Some jazz was played. Some jazz wasn't played. I don't know what that means. But some stuff happened on Monday Night Raw. I guess the main takeaway is that we have a brand new match set for Royal Rumble.
Huge.
Fittingly enough, it's a new Royal Rumble. A all-women Royal Rumble. Remember a few weeks ago when somebody on Twitter asked us, could you ever see there being a women's Royal Rumble?
I hope our answer was yes.
It was Scotty, at Scotty0015, asked us. He said, do you think that there could ever be one? No, we both said absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah, because we both said there's not enough talent. I think that may have been before the introduction of the six new women now that are there.
I would hope so.
So we were wrong. Which, actually, I'm not going to say we're wrong.
No. Well, it depends. Like,
in hindsight.
Yeah, in hindsight.
We would have.
I mean, I don't know, Kevin. Like,
do you like the idea of the Women's Royal Rumble?
I love the idea of the Women's Royal Rumble. It was long overdue. Mm-hmm. Seeing as how they have their own Money in the Bank match now, it was only fitting that this is going to be announced and that they're going to have a Royal Rumble match. I don't care that it's at the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. Like, there's no, like, they're not taking any of the shine away from the men's match or anything like that.
Mm-mm.
It's just a perfect idea. And having it in Philly, and Philly is supposedly, like, the wrestling mark city, right?
Yep.
Like, isn't that the number one city for
Smarks?
For Smarks.
Smarks Unite in Philadelphia. The city of Smarkily Love.
So, you know, great idea. Loved it. Steph coming out to announce it makes sense. As I was talking to Ocho and Ortiz, Ocho pointed out that maybe not having all the women jump around and doing the yes chant, he wasn't a huge fan of that.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's just a little nitpicky thing from him, but I was just talking to him on Twitter about it.
Do you like Steph being the face of this?
I think it makes sense, yes, because she is going to be the future owner of WWE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once Vince either leaves or dies for real this time. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
He died like late 2000s.
Yeah, his limo exploded.
Yeah, late 2010s.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it makes sense. But to go back to what we were talking about and there not being enough women, it just depends on how many they expect to have in this Royal Rumble. Are they going to go 30?
Yeah, I don't think they can.
I think...
Unless they bring in a bunch of NXT.
Yeah, and some girls from Shimmer, like some of the ones we saw in the Mae Young Classic.
Mm-hmm.
So off the top of my head right now, I think you can do 20. That's off the top of my head, women from SmackDown and Raw, not including Alexa Bliss and Charlotte. I think they can do 20. And then they can also bring up some NXT girls as well.
I think they're going to have to bring in NXT women.
Yeah,
for sure.
Not a bad idea to do that, you know, because we saw that a couple years back, WrestleMania Play Button, Hideo Itami made his debut in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
We're just bringing things full circle today.
Full circle, yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
I am looking forward to it.
Yeah.
The women's Money in the Bank ladder match fell a little flat for me.
Right.
So I'm not going to set my expectations very high for this Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. It's all about execution with these things. I think this is a fantastic step in the movement towards making women's wrestling just as important as the men's, which it should be. And I think that they really got to hit this out of the park, though. They got to come up big.
Well, yeah, the first one is always the spectacle of it. So you can get away with maybe it not being as good, but it's when it gets to that second and third one, that's where you really need to, like, that's where I feel like you really need to hit it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the sour taste, too, from the women's Money in the Bank, if there is sour taste in anybody's mouths, is the fact that SmackDown seems to be a little bit of a reoccurrence with SmackDown. You know, last year they had Randy Orton win the Royal Rumble. He's a SmackDown guy.
Mm-hmm.
Gave up his Royal Rumble spot, then had to, well, it was weeks of battle royals trying to determine who the number one contender was for Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
Did the same thing with the Women's Money in the Bank, had to redo that on SmackDown. I can only hope that a woman from SmackDown doesn't win this so that we don't see another women's battle Royal Rumble or battle royal on
Raw,
on SmackDown. On
SmackDown. Yeah. So yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's going to be interesting in the weeks moving forward to see how this develops, how many women, like we mentioned, are going to be in this, who's going to be competing. Is there going to be a title change before Royal Rumble?
And is the winner of this women's Royal Rumble going to challenge the champion at WrestleMania? Because I don't think Steph stated that, unless I'm missing something.
She did not state that. Right. Is that something that should go without saying? Or, like, should we assume that? I guess he can't assume logic in professional wrestling.
Yeah, I think you have to state it, you know, because if the winner isn't challenging the champ at WrestleMania, then that means Charlotte and Alexa Bliss are in this thing. Carmella could be in it, and Carmella, you could even double up her so she can be Miss Money in the Bank. She can also win the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, and challenge the champion, be the number one contender, and then if she fails, cash in the same night if
give
she wants.
Give me your early Royal Rumble winner on the women's side.
I'm going to go with Asuka.
Seems like that makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense, right?
Makes a lot of sense.
Maybe Paige.
Paige would be good. Second. Paige would be really good, yeah.
Nia Jax, my third. And then,
I think those are three pretty good options.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one from SmackDown that could do it.
None of the women from SmackDown blow me away.
No, maybe Becky Lynch, but hasn't been around now for a couple weeks. She's hurt.
She's filming that movie.
Filming the movie, so
she'll come back eventually, though. You got to think that, like, they're gonna have all talent on deck for this thing.
Even Natalya, who cut a heel promo when she was already a heel and turned her back on the crowd in Boston that was already had their back turned to her anyway. So
quick sidebar on Natalya.
Yeah.
She is quite honestly my least favorite professional wrestler.
Yeah. I don't know if it's
out of everybody. I can't stand her. Well, like, during that match I was watching, she was driving me nuts. Why did she keep asking me or keep saying, "So you like Charlotte?"
Yeah, we do.
So you like Charlotte? What? Yes?
Yeah. Yeah,
why
we
do you keep asking me this?
I don't. If she is doing this on purpose, she's a genius.
If I'm getting worked, brother, then
but I have a feeling it's not.
I have a feeling this is not a work. Anyways, good for the women. Your girl, I get the point of Alexa being in the middle of this. They want all the women out there for this big announcement. But your girl Alexa running in again to seemingly save the day, trying to beat up Absolution.
She did it right this time, though, because she ran in and then she went straight for Nia Jax, who has been her friend on Total Divas from what I've seen. And then, of course, you know, earlier on this year when she won the title originally, having a Nia Jax at her back, I still don't want to see her out there. I still think she should be as far away as possible. But I get, like you said, having all women on deck for this announcement.
Yep.
So, but at least this time she went straight to Nia Jax.
The announcement was still a little weird for me. The way it was done, just there's a lot of women fighting. Here comes Stephanie. And then she just starts talking about how great the women are.
Yeah.
It's like, why have we stopped fighting?
And they're all doing the yes chant.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So that was what Ocho said too from the podcast, Ocho and Ortiz.
It was kind of odd. Okay, what else happened on Raw that we should talk about? I think like the opening moment of Raw. I I watched it right when I got home from the bar. Mm-hmm. So you'd think that I would just be in a great mood, but then I started watching it, and God, did I hate it.
Put you in a bad mood.
Kane is so stupid. I hate it. Yeah. I hated this segment. Also, like, the announcement that Angle made.
And it just ran out of the ring.
And he's made it so kooky. By the way, this is going to be a triple threat match at Royal Rumble. Yeah.
Oh, I got to get out of here, my neck. Yeah, I'm on board. Like you're driving that Kane hating ship, and I'm right there with you, pal. I'm shoveling the coal.
All aboard!
I'm shoveling the coal into the fire there for you. I'm trying my best. I'm right there with you. It should just be one on one, Lesnar versus Strowman. There's no need for Kane. Strowman should have beat him last week decisively, and that's it. But for some reason, the guy's in there. Big red retard. Big red machine.
So that's what The Rock called him in 1998.
Yeah.
Or 99.
Yeah, that's inappropriate language that I used. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're an awful human being. So, does Kane have a legitimate shot to becoming champion?
I can only imagine your reaction if he does win the championship.
I would have put my head through the fucking window.
Yeah, so I kind of want him to see him win it just because I want to see your reaction to it.
You're pretty sick, Chubbs.
I know. But no, I don't think he has a shot in hell. This is either going to be Lesnar or Strowman.
Kane's just there to take the pinfall for whomever they're going to either keep the strap on Brock or Strowman's going to take it. And Kane is just there to take the pinfall.
Yeah, 100 double underscore.
What else is there to do with him?
No. Let's just hope it's not win the title.
This opening segment was stupid. I didn't like it.
I did not like it either.
Okay, let's recap the everybody involved in the IC title picture. I don't know. Seth Rollins, is he there? Jason Jordan? Roman wasn't on Raw last night.
No, Roman wasn't there.
Interesting.
They did a lot of doubling up where they had, like Balor wrestled twice.
Yeah.
And Rollins wrestled twice. Well, Jason Jordan as well. Samoa Joe was out there. Digesting the festive special, as I like to call it. I had a festive special last night while you guys were all celebrating with each other here at Sportsnet.
We're having a festive special of our own.
I had the Swiss Chalet festive special, and I had a little bit of a rough time after consuming a half chicken or a half turkey and stuffing and fries.
I had a little bit of a rough time after consuming 14 gin and tonics.
Ooh.
It was quite the evening.
Two of which were free, right? Because they gave you two drink tickets?
Yeah, they were, was nice.
Still a hefty bill, though. 14.
Everybody was buying drinks, though. Just everyone was just putting drinks on, throwing down plastic and drinks and drinks and drinks. Sheamus, Cesaro, Joe defeated Ambrose, Rollins, and Jordan.
And hurt Ambrose. Arm injury.
Does it work? I haven't looked into it too much, to be honest.
They had the doctor come by. I mean, I don't know.
This is a work. It's got to be a work. Are we being worked, brother?
I'm going to say we are being... No, I'm going to say I'm being worked. Because I'm the dumb one that would think it was real. I'm the mark that would actually think he hurt his arm. But it looked like it was legit.
Bleacher Report is saying that Dean Ambrose is reportedly suffering from a legitimate elbow injury, which led to WWE's decision to involve him in an injury angle on Monday's episode of Raw. And that is according to PW Insider's Mike Johnson.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm not a total idiot.
Well, maybe still, but you're right in this case. So there you go. That's a way to write Dean off TV for a few weeks. I imagine he'll come back to the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I would imagine he'd be in the Royal Rumble. And that would be a good return. So, oh my God, it's Ambrose! It's Dean Ambrose! The Lunatic Fringe!
Yeah, that's exactly what Michael Cole is going to say.
Yeah.
So that leaves Rollins kind of on his own right now. I mean, Reigns has got the IC strap, brother. And then Rollins is going to... He wants to challenge for the tag team championships, but he's not going to be able to without a tag team partner.
Oh, he's got Jason Jordan, maybe.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. They're doing a great job of doing what we said they should do, they being WWE, is tie up Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns with other people using Jason Jordan, intertwining the Shield and the Bar. Like, they are intertwining, like, almost a dozen guys in this storyline and keeping Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe apart.
It's good.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
They're keeping fresh matches every week on Raw, too.
Yeah. Like, Jason Jordan at the beginning there pushing Seth Rollins down to finally get Rollins to accept the match with him. And the look on Rollins' face where he's like, all right, you fucking guy, I'm going to get
you. You little shit.
Yeah, that's it. I've had enough.
Speaking of Rollins, our boy on Twitter, Ramador, he said, is it just me or should they find a name for Seth Rollins' finisher? I'm just tired of hearing Michael Cole screaming, the knee! Pretty sure we can find something better. And I said, absolutely they can.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I would, I'm going to put a heart on that tweet.
Oh, I just did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should come up with something.
So, they should call it something. Maybe the Rainmaker. Nobody has that yet, right?
Nobody has that yet. No. No, they can't do that. They can't do that.
It's funny. If you ever talk to Editor Chad, our New Japan Pro Wrestling insider,
yeah,
he always talks about how Rollins does it so terribly because, like, you can see him slapping his knee so clearly as he does it.
Yeah.
But if you watch Okada do the Rainmaker, just flawless. You don't see any slap, but you hear this gross-sounding thud when he smacks the guy.
I saw an interesting tweet from Rip Rogers, actually,
Did he say he hated everything?
Well, he was saying, I think it was like the second or third of like a string of tweets. You know how people tweet and they just string stuff together?
Yeah.
So I think it caught like one of the middle ones, but he basically said, you know, stop slapping your leg on drop kicks, super kicks, kicks in general, because the crowd now, you know, is, I don't know what he was referring to, like what crowd necessarily, but he was saying like the marks are laughing at you. Because it's so obvious.
A lot of guys, you can see it so obviously.
Yeah.
So obviously. Big Cass is a guy that comes to mind. Whenever he did his little big boot, I could just see him. It's like wind up and smack his leg.
Maybe Seth Rollins can call his finisher the knee slapper.
Oh! Yuck, 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 yuck. Yeah, we're all, he's laughing. He's having a good time. Laugh it up. Ah.
I don't hear you laughing now, clown.
You're going to die, clown. Maybe that's what the finisher could be called. You're going to die, clown.
There you go.
And he takes it. Oh, here comes the putter throw. Oh, wait. He's restrained himself. Maybe this is a new Seth Rollins.
And he goes to the Sizzler or the Red Lobster afterwards.
Be the Red Lobster if you need me.
Yeah.
God bless.
Jackass.
Nothing else really to talk about with those with that angle.
It was good. It's all good stuff.
Speaking of Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and Hideo Itami. Hey, look at that. Hideo Itami's on Raw out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And announced as being in the cruiserweight division.
Yeah, he's that kind of came out of nowhere. I think it was a little flat, him showing up. I don't want to say he's the poor man's Shinsuke Nakamura, but in WWE, he's kind of the poor man's Shinsuke Nakamura, right? Like, he doesn't have the...
He doesn't have any personality to him.
Yeah, there's no personality. He's just a guy wearing tights and kick pads coming down. He can wrestle, don't get me wrong. He's a great wrestler.
Yep.
And it was a good match, him and Balor.
But, it's weird when you look at that match, because I was looking at Hideo and I was looking at Balor. I was like, you guys are the same size, and Hideo is going to 205 Live.
Oh, you're going there.
I was like, why is he being pigeonholed into the cruiserweight division beside Finn Balor?
Mm-hmm.
They look the same.
Do you think they're going to put Finn Balor?
No, because that would be career suicide for one of the most popular wrestlers.
Oh man, I almost just fell back in my chair here. The recline option is
yuck. So Hideo Itami and Finn Balor, they had a little match with the Miztourage. Hideo gives the go to sleep.
GTS. Good move. We don't see that move anymore.
I didn't hear if there were any CM Punk chants started after that, did they?
Didn't hear any of those either, no.
Good. Good job. Good job, Boston crowd, or wherever they were. Where are they? Rhode Island or something?
Rhode Island. Providence?
Providence, Rhode Island. Yeah, good job, Rhode Island.
Site of the 94 Royal Rumble, maybe?
Welcome, everyone, to Rhode Island! I was going to ask if you're excited about Hideo Itami being in 205 Live, but we still won't watch the show.
No, still don't care.
No.
You know who I am excited about, though? Drew Gulak.
Gulak. He continues to be the shining star of the Cruiserweight division.
Yeah. I really liked after the match where he showed up and Enzo and Nia Jax were continuing their mm-hmm. potential love affair. And he came back with the bleeding nose and the cotton still stuck up there.
I love that.
Oh, it was hilarious.
Comes up, he's like, Enzo, I'm not all right. I'm not all right. I let you down.
I know what I'm going to do next time. There is no next time. I know what I did wrong.
Yeah, Gulak continues to be the man that I think you want to tune in to see on Monday Night Raw in the Cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
And Enzo was actually, I watched most of the match. I had to fast forward a little bit because I had to get here. I liked Enzo on commentary. I thought he was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Enzo was good on commentary.
He adds a lot of flavor.
And to
feed it to the flavor.
To go back to Gulak really quickly, I took a lot of heat off of Rian Johnson, who is the director of the latest Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, which hasn't been getting great reviews from the fans. Oh. The critics seem to love it, but the fans seem to hate it. And I loved his little in-ring commentary where Gulak mentioned he's the Jar Jar Binks of the WWE.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He
thinking that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Jokes. I get jokes. Anyway, Cedric Alexander is the number one contender for the Cruiserweight Championship. It'd be cool if Cedric won, but because I like Cedric, but I think you got to keep the strap on Enzo still. He's the biggest star in that division.
He's the guy with the personality. Biggest personality.
Everybody knows who he is, what he's about. I think he draws more money than anybody in that division.
I mean, Cedric Alexander is a great wrestler, but yeah, you're right. You got to go where the money is, right?
Yep, you have to. Woken Matt Hardy played some chests. Chess? Not chests. Chess.
Chess. Chess.
Chess.
Chess.
Chess. Chess. Chess. Chess. Chess. Chess. Chess. Chess. Chess. It out.
Chess. Chess.
Chess. Chess.
Chess. Chess.
It was a good few seconds of our lives mm-hmm. wasted.
You're never going to get those back.
Nope. It was another funny Matt Hardy promo. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like this. And this was, I think I mentioned this last week. I'd like to see some more little backstage vignettes, not necessarily involving Bray Wyatt, where we see Matt Hardy starting to be broken. Woken? He's starting to woken or he's starting to broken? Something woken. Like that. Either way. I want to see Matt Hardy
woken
on his own and not necessarily just playing the laughter in response to Bray Wyatt. Who, by the way, Bray Wyatt, what was he? Was he singing last night?
He was singing something.
He started to sing?
Now that I think back to it, he was singing something. I can't remember what it is now, though.
God, I don't want to remember what it is. Terrible.
He's entertainment, man. That's what he's all about.
Bray Wyatt in entertainment?
I'm a singer.
Gulak. Bray Wyatt in entertainment in the same sentence. Lately.
Yeah. So you know how we mentioned Dean Ambrose is probably out for a while?
Mm-hmm.
And the tag division looks not great. Hey, the Revival are back.
Oh, good.
They're here to save us.
Fantastic.
From what has been a very stale tag division.
Yes.
Because you know who's got a great tag division? SmackDown Live.
Oh, God.
That tag division is on fire right now. That four-way tag match was actually a lot of fun.
Should we just talk about Night of Champions really quickly?
Yeah, is there anything else from Raw you want to mention? Elias declared for the Rumble?
Well, I wanted to see him hit Sasha Banks and Mickie James with the guitar. I thought it would have been really funny to, like, as Bayley came down and then, like, when the camera kind of goes to a different angle and you see Elias walk away and Bayley walk towards the ring. I thought it would have been kind of funny if he turned around and raised the guitar like he was going to, but then he didn't, obviously, because you can't do that nowadays. And I just said all of that out loud on a podcast.
You can't do that, man.
I also tweeted it. So
you can't say those things out loud.
I'm putting it in stone, man. It just would have been funny to see. It's wrestling.
Wrestling?
Yeah. Come on. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, there's nothing else I see from Raw that you would really want to talk about.
No. Did I just put wrestling violence against women in the same thing and say it's fun? And I did.
If it's a work and it's a scripted show, then maybe.
Yeah, it's, well, it is, right?
But I mean,
still,
you got to make sure that we all know it's scripted and that's all we're looking for here.
I'd like to think everybody knows that.
The SmackDown Tag Champions match, the four-way, Usos, New Day, Gable and Benjamin, and then Rusev Day.
Oh, it was, is that the most over thing ever?
That's the most over thing in the WWE right now.
Oh, man, so good.
ADC tweeted that it's bigger than the Yes chant. Or, sorry, no, he's sorry, not that. He said it's bigger than Jericho's list was.
Maybe. He could be right on that.
I enjoyed the song, 12 Days of Rusev.
I think I enjoy Rusev Day more than Jericho's list.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because Rusev Day, also trickles down into Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And he's hilarious on Twitter. And on, did you see the ride-along with him and Lana and and the Fashion Police?
No. Nope.
It's great. Yeah, awesome maybe, stuff. Maybe everybody check it out. Yeah. It's only half an hour of your time.
Rusev and Dane English, stars in that match. Chad Gable, a star.
Those suplexes.
Those suplexes were fucking insane.
I thought he killed Big E with the one, I think.
Oh, it looked like he dropped him right in the back of his neck.
Yeah. Insane.
I just loved his presence. After he does it, gets up and dusts his hands off.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy is the man.
Take a second to breathe.
He's the greatest.
He's got star. He's got he has that 1990 Intercontinental Championship star.
Oh, yeah.
All over him. Yeah. If he was maybe instead of having Bret Hart beat Mr. Perfect, if it was Chad Gable against Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam 1991.
Gable's got huge star power on him.
Yeah.
And it says something that, I don't know, Shelton Benjamin was good in the match, but he didn't stand out for me, but Gable did. Other than that, I think it says something that the New Day were the least over in the match.
Yeah.
Over everybody, which is incredible. Usos, their entrance, loved it. Mm-hmm. 12th day, lockdown. 11th day, lockdown. 10th day, lockdown.
Lockdown.
I was a huge fan of that when they came in.
Yeah. I like the way they ended the match, too, with the super kick and then the splash off the top rope.
Yep, those guys still deserve to be the champs. They're the men. The men.
You cannot have a tag team match without these guys. They are the best in the business. I'd love to see, and I talked about this on Twitter, and I wanted to get your reaction to this really quickly. I'd love to see Usos versus the Young Bucks.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Those are the two top tag teams in wrestling, period,
yeah,
right?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah,
it looks, that would be dope.
If they could ever do that.
The Young Bucks, a while ago, they said there was a list of teams they really wanted to wrestle. And Usos were on there, New Day, and Revival, they said.
Revival would be a good one, too.
Revival would be dope.
I think maybe if I had to rank them, I'd say Usos and Revival are the top two in WWE. I know money and the entertainment factor probably goes with New Day. The fact that they have had a lot of success.
Yeah.
But I still go Revival or Usos, then Revival.
The opening match at Clash of Champions was Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder, which I think at one point I heard compared to Sean and Marty.
Yeah, that was Sam Roberts.
Let's never have that happen again.
Please don't do that ever. Yeah. I mean, I once said that what were they called? Mojo and what was their name?
The Hype Bros.
I once said they reminded me of the Rockers, but at no point ever did I ever think that them breaking up was ever even on par. I would completely retire from doing this if I ever said that their breakup was on par with Michaels and Jannetty.
Mm. And that is definitely true. The triple threat match for the U.S. Championship, Ziggler, Corbin, Bobby.
Yeah, shock. Shock that Ziggler won it.
Yeah.
Good for him, though. But I imagine it's going to go back to Corbin or maybe over to Rude at some point in the near future.
I think that Rude's going to get a shot with it.
Yeah.
You know what I think is weird? Last week on SmackDown, we never going to talk about SmackDown.
I very rarely watch it, even.
Last week on SmackDown,
it's a lie.
Screw that show. Rude was sitting ringside to do commentary during a match between Ziggler and Corbin. And he's sitting in his robe, and he's just there doing commentary. Then he takes off the robe, goes in the ring, and he's just got his wrestling gear on. Just the tights. You just sit around all day in your tights?
Your tights, yeah.
Just you're not... Ziggler came out in just a cutoff t-shirt and jeans. I was like, that makes more sense. That's how I just lounge around.
Yeah. It is weird whenever they do that.
I just think that's weird.
Yeah.
There's the SmackDown Women's Championship match. Charlotte feed in Natalya in a lumberjack match. And yeah, Natalya cut that terrible promo and was terrible in the match. I just don't like Natalya.
I don't like her.
I think she's bad.
Yeah. I mean, I respect her for her family's name.
I don't want to respect her just for that. I want her to gain my respect on her own merits.
True. Very true. But she's not the easiest to watch.
No. She's just, ugh.
I mean, I would like to think that she is contradicting herself on purpose. That's what I would like. But I don't think it is, as we talked about off the top.
The Bludgeon Brothers defeated Breezango. Sure.
Sure. I'm not feeling this Bludgeon Brothers thing.
I like the two guys.
Yeah, I love the two guys.
I don't know this Bludgeon Brothers thing.
Yeah. It's Eric and Rowan, right? Like, yeah. They were already a tag team.
Eric Rowan.
Years back.
Yeah. And Luke Harper.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, why do we need to be reintroduced to these guys?
Yeah.
Like, why do they need squash matches? We know who they are. I've seen them wrestle before.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn defeated Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton with two special guest referees.
You know, I didn't hate this. It was receiving a lot of flack for the two referees and it being slightly confusing and a little muddled, but actually didn't really mind this match. Is Daniel Bryan coming back?
Should we press the Daniel Bryan alarm?
I think he might be coming back.
If they're not, this is just a terrible tease. God damn it.
He took a bump.
He did take, well, was it a bump? He fell.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean.
I can immediately hear everyone saying like, oh, of course, Daniel Bryan's going to come back and his first opponent's going to be Shane McMahon. It's going to be a McMahon, of course.
So? So?
AJ and Shane was like the best match at WrestleMania last year.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, 100% agree with that. I think, we talked about this before.
So you know that Daniel Bryan's going to be able to put on a good match?
Oh, yeah.
And Shane will be able to do it?
Yeah.
It was funny. I liked when Daniel Bryan was standing there and he was looking at his ref shirt and Shane walks up. It's like, Shane is gigantic compared to Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Shane got jacked, too. And I feel like he's getting bigger and bigger since he came back.
It's kind of like Vince. Like, remember Vince back in the day? He wasn't very, like, wide. And then, there was that progression from, like, just normal-looking man to jacked-up upper body.
The Royal Rumble, where Austin was one and McMahon was two. Yeah. Vince came out, and I just love, I remember the reaction from the King going, look at Vince! Look at those arms!
The pecs! Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a fun match. The only thing is, nobody got over. The only people that got over were Daniel and Shane. Which, if that was the goal, it happened, but...
And really, like, what? Orton needs to get over? Nakamura needs to get over? No. Kevin, like, all those four wrestlers are already over, really, when you think about it.
Yep.
And they're only going as far as, like, WWE is going to push them.
Mm-hmm.
The real story right here is Daniel and Shane. And I like, too, that they even, like, it looked, whether or not it was supposed to be this way or they kind of figured it out on the fly, but I liked how they figured out, hey, you know, if the wrestler's on this half of the ring, you start reffing, and if they're on this side of the ring, I'll start reffing and doing the three count and stuff. So I really like that. And then at 1.2, Shane loses his mic in his ear. I don't know if you caught that.
That was pretty early in the match, I thought.
Yeah, so he was struggling to put that. I don't know if he ever got
I don't think he did. I saw him... like whisper over to Daniel, just being like, man, you got to keep me, like, I don't know what he said, but I'd imagine he's like, you got to keep me honest with timing. Like, yeah. I don't know how much time we're going to have.
Yeah.
So Daniel was pretty much running that match like a legitimate referee.
Yeah. And you could see too at times where he was a little unsure, Daniel Bryan, of like, you could tell this was like the first time for him. I think it was the first time for everybody having two referees in the same match.
Two referees. Yeah. Usually you just have like a referee and then an enforcer on the outside.
And I should probably know this, but with the tag teams, was that the first time ever where it was two team, like all four guys, like a guy from each team in there at the same time in that style of match? Because wasn't it before where it was only one guy from each team and then...
They do one-on-one and you could just tag anybody.
Yeah.
But in this one, it was four-way, but you could only tag your own partner.
Okay.
So which was intriguing.
Was that the first time that was ever done? That's the first time I remember it ever done like
that. If it's happened before, I can't remember off the top of my head. Okay. Or I couldn't... recall to another time, nor have I read about it.
I'm sure somebody will correct us at Top Turnbuckle, at 20-minute time limit, at Kevin underscore Mickey?
No underscore.
No, just at Kevin Mickey.
That's right. M-I-C-H-I-E. Then there was the WWE Championship match. AJ Styles retains. Goddamn right he should.
Yeah.
Guy's the best in the world.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, I tweeted this, and we talk a lot about Bret Hart selling the knee injury. AJ Styles did a Bret Hart-level job selling that rib injury.
Mm-hmm.
Like, constantly grabbing towards the ribs, taking his time to make even a cover. I loved it.
The 450, when he landed the 450, then just sold the hell out of the ribs.
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah. That was like, I always loved when RVD did the frog splash and then sold the hell out of it, that he hurt himself on the frog splash.
Yeah.
Love that.
Brady, I was talking to on Twitter to Brady Hartle. I forget what his at is. I think it might like Budweiser guy or something like that. I don't have it in front of me at the second. But we were talking about, he brought up, what if Jinder dumped the Singh brothers for the AOP, the Authors of Pain?
That's a hell of an upgrade.
Yeah. And that's what I thought too. Like, you know, if he's struggling to get that belt back and we're seeing the frustration between him and the Singh brothers, that would be a hell of an upgrade getting the AOP. Maybe they come up and, you know, help him at the Royal Rumble. I mean,
is Paul Ellering going to come with the AOP when they come up? Because like they can't speak for themselves.
No, they would need a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have to, or they'd have to pair him with somebody that can talk.
Like Jinder. Jinder isn't the greatest promo, but he can definitely do it.
Yeah. And they just need to look imposing, like monsters, and they are.
But I
thought it was a great idea.
Yeah. No, I do like that idea. Okay, shall we go back in time?
Oh yeah, let's do it.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going back in time to a year. That was actually just 20 years ago, so like it's not super crazy, but I was about to say, back into a time that we can't even remember.
Long time ago.
Moving pictures had just developed.
Color
on the television screen, not more radio, but television. Moving pictures, folks. That's right, the date was December 15, 1997, and it was Raw is War. Coming to you from Durham, New Hampshire. Did I get that right? Did I say that right?
Yeah, I think
so. Durham, New Hampshire, and it was the Whitmore Center Arena. Just, you know, it's kind of a MSG level vibe to it, definitely. Yeah,
historic.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the best boxing matches and concerts have happened there.
100%. Now, this was a taped episode. It was taped on December 9th for the December 15th airing.
It barely looked like it could hold the Titantron.
No.
Like the roof was so close.
This was like the end of WWE running arenas like this. We're coming up.
Yeah.
One of the very last little arenas I remember them running actually is next week on Raw. For some reason, I vividly remember.
Yeah, because it looks like an opera house sort of thing.
That's what it is. It's just tiny. Next week on Raw, I vividly remember for some reason. I think I've seen this December 22nd edition several times for some reason because it's Austin Stunner's Santa Claus, I remember. DX come out, moon the crowd that says, like, Merry Christmas or something on their asses.
Yeah, this is the one. Next week is the one too, where I think Sean is forced to put up the European Championship.
I do remember this, and just like it's fucking hilarious in hindsight because Hunter just like runs the ropes like 17 times like an idiot, and then just like lies on top of Sean.
Yeah,
and just like totally disparages the European title. He was like, "This is the greatest moment of my life that I finally have the European Championship."
Yeah, and Slaughter puts him up to it. This venue actually, now I've got it perfectly. This venue reminds me of the Longboat Hall here in Toronto,
where
Superkicked performs out of.
Interesting.
Speaking of historic, not to take too much time, but speaking of historic moments, Silesia Sparks wrestled Chris Chambers this past Friday at Superkicked and was well on her way to winning the Superkicked Championship, making history for women. It was the first time a woman has wrestled a man for the heavyweight championship.
Yep.
And she did a front flip off the top turnbuckle to the floor and broke her fibula and tibula.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so I want to wish her, you know, a get well soon, and thinking about her cuz man, she's a kick-ass wrestler.
That is pretty heavy shit.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the match, it's on YouTube right now. If you just look up Super Kicked.
Then that's
check it. Check it out. Yeah, all that's right. It.
Man. You'll find your glorious tones on that.
But get well soon, Silesia.
So Raw opens with Michael Cole interviewing The Undertaker. And just for me, this kind of, because we've been watching progression of this, it seems out of nowhere, Undertaker is all of a sudden announces the number one contender and the opponent for Shawn Michaels at Royal Rumble, and it's going to be a casket match. Not fun, but interesting to look back upon now and say that, oh, this is the end of Shawn Michaels 1.0 or 2.0, or wherever you think Shawn Michaels is in his career here.
Yeah.
Because you announced that match, Michaels hurts his back on the casket. Obviously, he had pre-existing injuries, but this back injury is what really ended it for him the first, second time, whatever you want to say. Second time, you want to call it that?
I'll say it's the second time.
Because he had lost his smile before?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is the second time.
Yeah.
Not the pussyfoot injury that Brett alluded to.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to look back upon, just this being the announcement of the ending of Shawn 2.0.
Yeah. I never really thought about it like that, but yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to, now, from this point on, this is how I'll look at it. Yeah. It was kind of odd, though. You were right, though. It was odd that The Undertaker was just sort of thrusted right away, right into this, you know, because he wasn't really mentioned in any conversation with DX and Shawn Michaels.
Nope.
I mean, there was history in 97. Obviously, Shawn Michaels, you know,
the Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, swung the chair and cost Undertaker the title at SummerSlam 97. And then, of course, the Hell in the Cell match.
Yep.
Maybe if they had made a little bit more reference to that leading up to this announcement, it would have fit better, but it definitely was sort of out of the blue.
Taker kind of mentioned that he had wrestled Shawn before and kicked his ass once, he'll do it again, blah, 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 blah. So he's talking about he's going to beat the shit out of Shawn, and then Kane comes out of nowhere. You must fight your brother, Undertaker! You must fight your brother! Taker won't do it. He won't wrestle his brother. He won't fight his brother. Kane gives him a big old slap to the face, then tries to do it again. Taker blocks it and leaves the ring. This is some excellent storytelling.
Yeah.
The Kane-Undertaker storyline, when it first started, incroyable.
Oh, yeah.
And it's awesome that it pretty much started in the summer of 97 and carried all the way to WrestleMania.
Yeah, amazing how long this one, and then we'll get to it a little bit later on, but so many of these feuds, how long they had to go before we saw a match was crazy.
It was good, though. Like, that's it's the benefit of long-term storytelling, and it's just like, it's so good when it pays off, as it did this time with Undertaker Kane. Great ratch at WrestleMania.
I mean, it didn't hurt that Kane set the Undertaker on fire inside his own casket at the Royal Rumble. But
that was pretty good.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Your brother's alive, Undertaker. Your brother's alive.
I love Paul Bearer.
He was great. Especially I liked him when he was he'd come back as a manager as a babyface. And I just always like, the fat man is back.
Yeah. The fat man. Oh, man.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
That's so good.
So anyways, that takes up the majority of the early portions of Raw. The next thing we get is a little match. Taka Michinoku, who is your new Cruiserweight champion, is taking on Jerry the King Lawler as they are feuding because Taka beat Brian Christopher, and the King just likes Brian Christopher. He's not related to him at all.
No,
at least the King wouldn't have you believe that.
No, JR would allude to it a bunch of times. Father and son, too sexy Brian Christopher and Jerry the King Lawler. Yeah, it's a good match.
Nothing really
special. A lot like the Cruiserweights now.
Brian Christopher comes out and breaks up the pin after Taka scores with the Michinoku driver. And so that means that Taka wins by DQ over the King in 5 minutes and 45 seconds. Mm.
Good length for that match. Good length of time.
Yeah. I can't see anything else really mattering there. No. So next thing that happens is they announce that it's going to be DX versus LOD later in the evening in the main event. Mm-hmm. Cool. And then The Nation comes out and they say this is the week after Austin has forfeited the IC championship to The Rock. And then Austin just took the belt with him when he left.
Yeah.
So now The Rock comes out and he says, you have 1 hour to deliver me the Intercontinental Championship. Otherwise, like, we're going to come and whoop your ass. It's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah, I like the look on Farouk's face, too, when The Rock, like, cut him off.
I meant to note that, actually. Very good. The seeds are being planted here, folks.
Yeah.
These are the seeds of the beginning of the dissension of The Nation, saying that The Rock is actually the leader. When he goes quiet, the champ is talking.
Yeah.
And Farouk's face. Ooh, great selling.
The whole time. Yep. The whole time, even while Austin was on the stage, Farouk was just staring at The Rock, like, just with that, what did you just do to me, kid?
Stank eye.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to have a little match. It's Road Dogg one-on-one with Dude Love. The New Age Outlaws continue to wear South Park characters on their T-shirts. They're both wearing Cartman T-shirts this time. Fun little fact, this is the first time we actually get the name, the New Age Outlaws.
Yeah.
As Jim Ross mentions it on commentary, he says, you know, a lot of guys have called you the New Age Outlaws. And Billy Gunn goes, yeah, you know what? They have. And that's our name. There you go. The New Age Outlaws name is born. And it happened in this episode.
Yeah. And Billy Gunn accepting the credit as he came up with the name.
Mm-hmm.
He also did the entrance this time. Road Dogg didn't do the
Billy
entrance.
Gunn was on the mic. Yeah. Yeah, yes. Very, very interesting.
So, as we've talked about before in the weeks before, is you know, the progression, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier in the podcast in the retro review here, is just the progression, and you're seeing it, the progression week after week of how these guys get to be even a part of DX, as we saw later in this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, and then how they grow as a tag team. And then even, you know what also I liked about this is Mankind starting to pull out his hair as Dude Love. So he's Dude Love in this match, but starting to pull out his hair. And then even commentary makes mention to it that he's doing, you know, he's turning into Mankind. So we're starting to see the three shades of Foley.
The three
right?
faces of Foley. Three faces all of making Foley. Their appearances, yeah.
Yeah, and then that spot where he gets, they slam the referee into him, they being the New Age Outlaws.
Pretty hellacious bump that he takes off the stage.
Landing right on his shoulder, and that, like, I guess it's like a plastic table.
He missed the table, pretty much. Just like he flipped the table over. That was about it.
Yeah, he landed on, like, instead of in the middle, it looked like he landed on the end, and then there's just one leg of the table is just, like, bent in half.
Yep. This is obviously leading up to it was WrestleMania where it was Dude Love and Cactus Jack.
In a dumpster match.
Sorry, Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie in the dumpster match against the Outlaws.
Yeah.
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 So that's leading all to this still. So Mankind takes a hellacious bump. He'd be all right, obviously. Next.
He didn't look okay.
No. So, and by the way, Dude Love won that match with a double arm DDT after Sweet Chin Music turned into double arm DDT. He won the match in 4 minutes and 39 seconds. Sweet Next is probably the greatest match that you'll see in wrestling if you go watch it. Mark Henry versus the Brooklyn Brawler.
When you said greatest match, I was like, oh man, did I miss a portion of this Raw or something?
How could you miss this, man? Oh, sorry, you missed it because it's 2 minutes and 3 seconds. Mark Henry squashes the Brooklyn Brawler and wins with a bear hug.
Great gimmick, the Brooklyn Brawler.
Brooklyn Brawler taps out to the bear hug.
Yeah. It probably wasn't the first time he did that in his illustrious career, but Mark Henry, what a beast. A beast of a human being.
This is his return to Raw after he broke his ankle during his wrestling training. So remember, he was shown on Raw earlier in the year, even in 96, and he was kind of portrayed as the next great WWE superstar. But now he's back, and he's squashing the Brooklyn Brawler.
Yeah.
There was a little package they showed.
Deadlifting
weights. It was like a record 900-pound deadlift.
Strong man.
Yep.
He's strong.
So next, this is truly an interesting time in the world of professional wrestling. Next, we're going to enter the war zone. which is the 9 o'clock hour or the second hour. 10 o'clock? Too much time and not enough time.
I was going to say, maybe we should start playing like a portion of the intro when we start doing these retro raw reviews. But you and I are having so much fun just going. I think we found our new intro.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. So Vince McMahon comes out. This is the seeds of Mr. McMahon.
Yeah.
Let's call this episode of Raw the dawn of the Attitude Era. Because later we'll get the now famous, I'm not going to call it infamous because it's famous, promo from Vince where he talks directly to the viewer, completely breaking kayfabe in the middle of a WWE broadcast to tell them that they're pushing the creative envelope. I'll read you the entire description later. So first he comes out and he calls out Owen Hart. He says, I know you're here, Owen, and I just want to say you're endangering all the fans around ringside. You can't do that. You can't run in. You're endangering the fans. Seeds of Mr. McMahon. Mm-hmm. Big time. Owen comes out, and Owen gives, for me, a very, very good promo. Like, one of Owen's better promos, for sure.
This is Owen Hart's best promo ever. Maybe he cut something better in 94 when he was challenging Bret Hart for the title. Maybe. But for me, my money, this was the best promo he's ever cut, and the crowd was hot for him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, last week you talked about him getting a title match, and he should have got a title match. Oh, like, you're 100% right. At some point, it's too bad. It's a shame that there wasn't.
I'm telling you, the timing of this, because it's Michaels, Taker, and Austin, and it's the lead up to WrestleMania, and it's just there's no justification to put the title on Owen at this time. The money's not there,
or even to have the match. Like the Royal Rumble, maybe you could have made a reason to have like Owen versus Shawn in a street fight for the title or something, but the money is Undertaker Michaels.
Big time.
Yeah.
The thing is, what great storytelling. And the fans are so behind Owen. Mm-hmm. Owen. Owen. Those chants going crazy. Owen swearing in these interviews. Like, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
He says stuff like that.
He wasn't like saying, like, I'm going to kick your leg out of your leg.
Yeah.
So he finally got it right in this one.
This was great. Great stuff from Owen. And I liked that he just says, it's time for the little nugget to end it.
Yeah.
And then Vince calls out some police officers to escort Owen away from the arena, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I loved how
it's like the Austin treatment.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. They gave him the Austin treatment. I didn't think about that. But I liked how he backed McMahon into a corner, too, and he just did that slow, like, shift forward.
I loved the end when he asks Owen to leave, and then Owen just grabs him by the scruff.
Yeah.
And looks into his eyes, says something, and then just leaves. Owen looks like a badass.
Totally. I don't remember this either.
Neither do I. I don't remember. I didn't recall this.
No. Like, I just remember him, and we see it later where they play, they being Shawn Michaels and Triple H, play rock, scissors, papers to see who gets Owen. And I just remember Owen being sort of that whipping boy for China and Triple H. Because he would go on to wrestle Triple H for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania 14.
Yep. And, it's a shame Owen never got over after this incident. Mm-hmm. Because there is real, real good potential for it. Owen leaves. Next, we get another really incredible match. It's the Sultan, who's with the Iron Sheik. Taking on Tom Brandy. Tom Brandy is no longer Sal Sincere.
Yeah.
Because last week, after Mark Mero called him Tom Brandy, he's now just Tom Brandy.
This is the first time where I've watched the Sultan wrestle and actually see, I can actually see Rikishi.
Kind of the first plants of Rikishi there?
Well, just, no, like, I can tell, like, it's Rikishi behind the mask and the getup. You know what I mean? Like, I never clued in as a fan before, like, that was him. Like, people would always say, oh, yeah, the Sultan used to be Rikishi and blah, blah, blah. But this is the first time watching this morning where I was like, oh, yeah, that is Rikishi. Everybody was right.
Everybody was right all along.
All along.
So Tom Brandy gets the win here. He gets a roll-up on the Sultan.
Yeah, Jimmy Corderas was the referee.
He was. And this happens in a lovely 3 minutes and 50 seconds.
Beauty.
And then Mark Merrill is going to come down and give Tom Brandy the low blow. So it's the feud we've all wanted. Mark Merrill versus Tom Brandy.
Yeah.
It's developing, folks. It's happening.
Can't wait. Can't wait for that next week's episode.
Yep. Then we get, again, one of the more famous incidents to ever happen in the World Wrestling Federation. It's been an hour. The Rock says it's time for Stone Cold Steve Austin to give me my Intercontinental Championship back. During the Tom Brandy match, we get news from Jim Ross, who says, we've just got word that Stone Cold has left the building, but he's invited one of our remote crews to follow him. So we have cameras on him wherever he's going. It's like, oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get The Rock and The Nation in the ring. Stone Cold shows up on the screen and starts throwing shit in a river.
Yeah.
Throws
oxygen mask.
Throws goggles, snorkel, oxygen mask, flippers. He's like, here's a little flippers because you probably can't swim. Throws a beeper.
Cell phone.
And then finally tosses the Intercontinental Championship into the river. Yeah. One of the more iconic moments that just like you can ever remember. And I just love it at the end, after he throws it out, he goes, you're just a piece of trash. Go swim out there and find the damn thing. If he's lucky, he'll find it. If not, maybe he'll drown. I don't really give a damn what he does.
You know, considering what we've gotten thus far, and we still haven't had McMahon read out the... Have we heard from McMahon yet? Has he read out the statement?
Not yet. That's next.
Like, could you imagine the fans now, like us getting an episode of Raw loaded with this type of material, like historic material in wrestling? This is insane. I loved that Austin throwing the... I remember being a kid and him actually throwing the belt. I remember losing my mind. And it's funny... Fast forward to like when did Rock wrestle Cena the first time in Miami, WrestleMania 28? What year was WrestleMania 28? Do you remember? Was it 2012, 2013, 2011 maybe? Regardless.
2012?
Regardless. Do you remember that promo where Rock was on the pier in Boston and he was throwing John Cena merchandise into the harbor in Boston?
Yeah.
And he was like, what fifth dimension of hell did this John Cena garden gnome come from? So it's funny, years later, The Rock would be doing a similar thing.
The Rock has taken that gimmick and doing it.
Yeah.
So we get a recap of what just happened after we get a season's beatings.
Ooh.
From the World Wrestling Federation, a.k.a. just wishing us Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And then we get what Jim Ross announces as an editorial piece from Vince McMahon in the World Wrestling Federation. It is called The Cure for the Common Show. And Vince McMahon says this. I have transcribed it. It has been said that anything can happen here in the World Wrestling Federation, but now more than ever, truer words have never been spoken. This is a conscious effort on our part to open the creative envelope, so to speak, in order to entertain you in a more contemporary manner. Even though we call ourselves sports entertainment because of the athleticism involved, the key word in that phrase is entertainment. The WWF extends far beyond the strict confines of sports presentation into the wide open environments of broad-based entertainment. We borrow from such programs, from such program niches as soap operas like Days of Our Lives or music videos such as those on MTV, daytime talk shows like Jerry Springer and others, cartoons like King of the Hill on Fox, sitcoms like Seinfeld, and other widely accepted forms of television entertainment. We in the WWF think that you, the audience, are, quite frankly, tired of having your intelligence insulted. We also think that you're tired of the same old simplistic theory of good guys versus bad guys. Surely, the era of superhero who urges you to say your prayers and take your vitamins is definitely passé. Therefore, we've embarked on a far more innovative and contemporary creative campaign that is far more invigorating and extemporaneous than ever before. However, due to the live nature of Raw and the War Zone, we encourage some degree of parental discretion as it relates to the younger audience allowed to stay up late. Other WWF programs on USA, such as Saturday Morning Live Wire and Sunday Morning Superstars, where there's a 40% increase in the younger audience, obviously, however, need no such discretion. We are responsible television producers who work hard to bring this outrageous, wacky, wonderful world known as the WWF. Through some 50 years, the World Wrestling Federation has been an entertainment mainstay here in North America and all over the world. One of the reasons for that longevity is, as the times have changed, so have we. I'm happy to say that this new vibrant creative direction has resulted in a huge increase in television viewership, for which we thank USA Network and TSN for allowing us to have that creative freedom. But most especially, we would like to thank you for watching. Raw and the Warzone are definitely the cure for the common show. End quote.
I couldn't have said it or read it any better myself. You did a fantastic job reciting what Vince once said.
I think it's important to remember that.
Yeah, it's great. It was like you said, it was historic, and it was the beginning of the Attitude Era.
It definitely was.
Or it was part of the beginning of the Attitude Era. I feel like there's a bunch of moments.
This is the announcement of the beginning of the Attitude Era, essentially, yeah. We got to fly through the rest of this. I'm sorry. Right.
I like the shout-out to TSN. I wonder if Sportsnet would get a shout-out.
Maybe. I mean, we're an official partner. Right after that, we get the incredible match of Steve Blackman and Jose Estrada. Awesome. This is actually Blackman's first ever singles match on television in the WWF, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Like you said, it was a fantastic match.
Yep. It truly doesn't get any better. Yeah, then we get a promo from DX. Nothing too special there. And then finally, we are at our main event of the evening. It's the Legion of Doom taking on DX, consisting of Shawn Michaels and Triple H, who is with China at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Match is okay. China comes into the ring and takes care of Animal with a low blow for the DQ. 7 minutes and 41 seconds. LOD picks up the win, but it's what happens afterwards that is most noteworthy.
Well, yeah, and it's the look on Shawn Michaels' face as the broadcast closes, where he's doing the, I've got a good idea. Like, I like what these guys are doing here. Maybe we can all sort of, I don't know, I can't put my finger on it. What should we do? Should we become a foursome? A DX foursome.
Chris is alluding to here is the fact that after the match, the New Age Outlaws come down to help out DX, and they chloroform on a rag and knock out Animal.
Yeah, it looked like he was choking on his own spit.
They put something on a rag.
Yeah.
And then they shave Hawk. The Mohawk off Hawk.
This has got to be the beginning of the end for Hawk, because at some point, really. They become LOD 2000, and then doesn't Hawk just go completely off the rails?
They do that terrible gimmick with Hawk becoming a alcoholic.
Suicidal and all that.
Yeah, and he tries to kill himself jumping off the Titantron. That was terrible. So anyways, they shave the Mohawk off Hawk, and then, the Outlaws have done such a good job that Michaels is so impressed that he's stroking his chin as the Outlaws exit, thinking, almost planting the seeds of a DX Outlaws friendship, if not relationship.
Yeah. And they put Animal through the table too, as well. Like, shield bomb him through the table, which was great. They just destroyed Legion of Doom. And it's a tie-in of multiple storylines.
Yeah.
And it's similar to what we're seeing with Jason Jordan, Reigns, Samoa Joe, Rollins, The Bar, and Ambrose. There's a tie-in. It's all being tied together. Wonderfully done. Stories are being told. There's progression on all levels. Just fantastic. An amazing episode of Monday Night Raw.
Really, really good. Really fun episode. I hope that everyone else enjoyed this episode of Top Turnbuckle. If you want to subscribe, go to wherever you get podcasts. Hit the old subscribe button. Give us a review on iTunes. 5 stars would be nice. Leave us a little comment. If you want to get at us, it is at 20 Min Time Limit. That's Chris. At Kevin Mickey, M-I-C-H-I-E. That's me, Kevin Mickey. Or at Top Turnbuckle. Make sure to give our SmackDown show a listen, too. You can hear some stupid and hilarious voices from Andrew David Cox. Any parting words, Chris Morrison?
Yes, Top Turnbuckle. I now decree, if that's the right word, Top Turnbuckle is the cure for the common wrestling podcast.
We out.